You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everybody, to a happy post-game edition of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose of Sports Talk 790. Rockets got a big win, 114-106 in the nation's capital tonight over the Wizards, improving the Rockets to 4-3 on the season. A lot of positives to get to, starting with James Harden's 32 points and 15 assists. Just another ho-hum night for him. Tonight's episode, I'm joined by Eric Spyropoulos. He's a writer for the Dream Shake. That's the Rockets affiliate on SB Nation. Eric, how's it going tonight?
I'm doing well tonight. How are you, Ben?
Oh, pretty happy, relieved after that. Rockets certainly made it a little more interesting than it had to be with a pair of turnovers from Nene and Eric Gordon in the last minute. But we'll get to that in a little bit. I want to start with just really a breathtaking night from James Harden, because we get used to it, but we still have to point out just how ridiculous this is. 32 points, 15 assists, 6 rebounds, 9 of 19 shooting. The thing that really stood out to me about this game, he started poorly. You know, the first quarter, he was 2 of 7 from the field, had 5 turnovers. And so people who, you know, just look at the box score, they'll see those positive stats and they'll say, yeah, but the 8 turnovers. But what was most impressive to me is that he started this game poorly, but rather kind of get sucked into a negative mindset, he just calmly worked his way out of it. And by the end of the game, he's James Harden MVP form again.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to come to a point, I think, or I hope not, but it might come to a point where, you know, we're disappointed when Harden doesn't put up 30 points and at least 15 assists and 6 rebounds in a game. He's just been bad. You know, these are almost routine performances. And as you mentioned, he started off slow. I thought he was really forcing things in the first quarter. He would drive and then kind of almost get like a slight double team and try and, you know, kick it out to a player who wasn't exactly open, and the Wizards got their hands on a lot of his balls, and that's what caused, you know, the 5 turnovers in the first. And then he was checked in a little bit earlier than usual in the fourth quarter, but then he got into a groove. The Rockets offense went on a nice run, reverted a little bit too much to Harden ISOs in the last couple of minutes, which was another concern. But overall, I mean, after a slow start to put up these numbers and lead them to a win on the road, it was another impressive performance from Harden.
Yeah, one thing that I really liked about it, I've seen in the past, when he tends to start slow, there are times when you can feel his body language sort of slump. And while we certainly didn't, you know, you wouldn't want to anticipate that 6 games into the year, well, this was game 7, but, you know, you certainly wondered after the first quarter on the road if this was going to be one of those games when he tried to be, you know, a facilitator rather than aggressive, because he just sensed it wasn't his night. And to me, what was impressive, yes, he got to the line 11 times, made all 11 of his free throws, but the way he was able to just, you know, it seemed, will himself back into the game from the field. I mean, he's been great from 3, and I think that's the ultimate equalizer. It feels like for James, when he shoots 40% from 3, which is what he's done so far this year, that's able to snap him out of it in a big hurry.
Yeah, and the thing with Harden that I've started to notice over the past couple of games is, you know, when he does get his isolations or his mismatches, he's actually, you know, he's actually staying on the three-point line and reverting to taking threes, which, again, if he's hitting 40%, that's going to make a huge difference. If he's hitting 35%, he's, you know, it's not going to help. But, yeah, him hitting a threes is a really big deal, because he's been relying on that jump shot when he gets mismatches or when he goes into his ISOs a lot this season.
Yeah. Besides James, because we can talk about James all night, but to some extent we almost expect it now, given his PER right now is still over 35, which I can't get over. That's just so ridiculous. Other big takeaways for me, Clint Capela in the first half, he tailed off a little bit, but certainly 14 points, 6 rebounds. I thought this was a pretty good game from him in terms of rim protection. I thought he finished pretty well in traffic, held his own against Gortat. And then down the stretch in the fourth quarter, obviously Ryan Anderson had a number of huge threes, finished 9 of 15 from the field, 5 of 8 from 3. By far his best game as a Rocket, at least in the regular season, I would say, and certainly making threes helped. But that to me was kind of the story. Capella in the first half, his energy kind of snapped them out of, you know, an early funk, led them to that 33-17 spurt in the second quarter. And then Ryan Anderson down the stretch was kind of the catalyst. Because as you said, Harden went a little bit iso ball, and it seemed like whenever that got to be a problem, Anderson just hit a three to snap them out of it.
Yeah, he had that big three, I think, with like a minute 20 to go. That really, you felt, you know, with the dagger and put them comfortably ahead. I liked Clint Capella's energy. He had four blocks, so you mentioned the rim protection. He was active, engaged, you know, running the floor. This was probably one of the better Clint Capella games we've seen. And then, you know, D'Antoni still finished the game with Nene on the court. And Nene ended up playing 21 minutes to Capella's 27. So we'll see how that kind of center rotation continues. And yeah, I thought it was Ryan Anderson's best game. You know, you can't expect anything from him defensively, but if he's hitting his threes, especially hitting them in the clutch time, that's what you paid Ryan Anderson the big bucks to do, hit his shots, and he did so tonight.
Yeah. Really welcome sign, the minutes distribution. I know so many people on Twitter would be thrilled if you see, you know, Capella tick up a little bit towards 27 and Nene at 21. You know you're not going to see Capella go 35 minutes a night, but, you know, just giving him a little bit more minutes than Nene, I know it would go a long way towards, you know, quieting some fears out there. Now, Nene did still play down the stretch. Unfortunately, had the bad turnover in the fourth quarter, but I thought this was a good game from Capella and also from Mike D'Antoni from the standpoint of, you know, Capella earned more playing time and D'Antoni gave it to him. So I think that's good to see. In terms of D'Antoni, though, one big thing that we all talked about on Twitter before the game was the switch of Eric Gordon to the bench for Corey Brewer in the starting lineup. And if you look at just the Gordon to the bench, I think a lot of people would agree with it because, really, the Rockets, when James Harden has not been on the floor this year, have been awful. I think they have the worst net rating in the NBA in those minutes. So certainly it's a big... It's a weak spot in theory. Now, they have been staggering Harden and Gordon's minutes, although you could argue that maybe keeping Gordon fresh, in other words, not trying to stagger him, maybe that's going to make him more effective early in the second and fourth quarters when Harden's out. But I want to ask you this question on a couple of levels. One, are you okay with Gordon going to the bench? Do you think this will help? And two, were you at all surprised that Brewer got the call as opposed to someone like KJ McDaniels?
To answer the first question, I'm more than fine with moving Gordon to the bench. It's going to be his role when Beverly comes back, most likely, keeps him fresh, allows him to run the second unit, you know, with Nene, kind of those two run pick and roll, and then, you know, operate the second unit. So I'm completely on board with moving Gordon to the bench. I was confused why Brewer was the one who got the start, and then I saw on Twitter you retweeted someone who was pointing out the point differential when Brewer plays with Harden versus when Brewer doesn't play with Harden.
And I was surprised by that too. Yeah,
I was very surprised by that. But that showed that Brewer with Harden is a good combination. Even with that being said, I still think I would have much rather had KJ in the starting lineup. I think at this point we know what Brewer is, and he's only on the decline. He played 16 minutes, shot 1 of 2, 4 points, 3 rebounds. Didn't really do anything, but, you know, he limited the Rockets' kind of offensive ceiling when they start the game. The difference between Brewer and Gordon is significant on the offensive end. And even then, Brewer doesn't add as much defensively as you would like for someone who doesn't really contribute offensively. You know, we know KJ is athletic and he's always energetic and involved, so I much rather would have had KJ McDaniel start, and he basically played the same amount of minutes as Brewer tonight. He played 14 and didn't really do that much either. But yeah, so I'm fine with moving Gordon to the bench, but I much rather would have KJ instead of Brewer. But this should all be solved next week when Beverly returns, because he tweeted that he's going to be returning next week, so that's a good sign.
Yeah, definitely. My sense, a lot of people have been asking me about it today, I think Brewer provides the least disruption. One thing that D'Antoni's been very big on from the start of training camp is keeping guys in consistent roles. If you remember when Pat Beverly initially went down in the preseason and they didn't think it was going to be more than, say, a week or two, they kept Gordon as a sixth man and made KJ the starter. And I think that's because, you know, they wanted Gordon to stay in the sixth man role, not really change, because they saw it as a temporary thing. And so I think now it's kind of you know, it's come full circle to where now they want to get Gordon back in his six-man role, and they've struggled without Harden. But where this relates to McDaniels, McDaniels has been a pleasant surprise. Everybody's pleased with how well he's playing off the bench, the energies that he's providing. So I think they see that McDaniels is working so well that, quite frankly, they didn't want to mess with it. That's my take on it. As you said, he and Brewer ended up playing the same minutes anyway. I think it's just easier to kind of yank Corey Brewer around, because at this point, Corey Brewer is what he is. Whereas KJ McDaniels is starting to get some confidence in that role off the bench as that kind of energy guy in the second half of the first and third quarters. So I think Mike D'Antoni just wants to give him, you know, a consistency of role. That's what I would say, because all of this is temporary anyway, because they think, you know, 2 weeks at the longest, hopefully next week, is when they'll get Pat Beverly back. And they need him on a number of levels, but I thought the end of the game really hit home the absence of Pat Beverly, because when you had those late-game turnovers, to me, it just showed you that outside of James Harden, the Rockets don't have a secondary ball handler. And so one, Nene on the pass, another, Eric Gordon just kind of lackadaisically took it up the court. But really, what I saw late in the game on those turnovers as well, the Wizards were putting two guys on Harden, and when they did that, the Rockets just weren't really able to adapt because they didn't have another ball handler they could trust. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, I think that's a completely fair assessment. Everyone had that concern that Beverly went down. And, you know, they need a second ball handler. Teams could press Harden in the backcourt, make him exert a lot of energy just to get the ball over the half-court line. So Beverly would help in that aspect. And then another underrated aspect that Beverly would help in is that if you add in Beverly and have that three-guard rotation of Gordon, Harden, and Beverly, you can really cut Tyler Ennis's minutes. And Ennis has been, he was a lot better in the games against Dallas. Tonight, he had 3 assists to 2 turnovers. I just think that, and I was actually listening to Nate Duncan and his Dunked On podcast this morning, and he was mentioning how getting Ennis out of the rotation will help the Rockets. I kind of agree with that. So if you add Beverly in, you can even reduce Ennis's minutes even more, which will help the Rockets in their second unit. I think will help them a little bit better as well. So Beverly helps in a couple of aspects, but a main one is that secondary ball handler next to James Harden.
Yeah, and speaking of that podcast, I listened to it too. Another point they brought up, and it's a fair one, is wondering if Eric Gordon has enough juice to really create on his own. Because a lot of people have pointed out that, you know, the Rockets have been struggling in the second and fourth quarter, but a lot of the time, the second and fourth quarter with Harden is on the bench, I want to clarify. But people have pointed out that a lot of these minutes have been played with Gordon on the floor. And so they brought up on the podcast, you know, the question of, is Gordon enough of a creator? Because, you know, I think we're all pleased with Eric Gordon, how well he's played in these first 7 games, but he's done it largely alongside James Harden, being that kind of secondary complementary shooter, someone that can create a little bit off the bench. But when he's the focal point for the defense, when James Harden is not in the game and everybody is focused on Eric Gordon, the question is he good enough to, you know, anchor an offense? And so that's where I could see this rotation being more effective. I know they've tried to stagger minutes, but I think if he's playing the first 6 or 7 minutes and then getting yanked out and then getting put back in, he's not as fresh for those early minutes in the second and fourth quarters. Whereas when Beverly comes back, I think if you bring Gordon off the bench, he's got a much more chance of being in rhythm rather than yanking him in and out, or at least that's the hope I have. Is that at all reasonable?
I think that could definitely be a part of the thought process that Mike D'Antoni and the coaches had when starting to make these alterations to the rotation. You definitely need Gordon to be, you know, at his highest energy if you're going to expect him to really create with the minutes when James is off the floor. Another interesting idea I'm just thinking about right now is if you start Beverly and Harden and bring Gordon off the bench, if you were to stagger the minutes in a similar way, so where Beverly would play 6 or 7 minutes and then Gordon would play to finish the first quarter with Harden, similar to kind of like the starting lineup that they have now or did have before this game, I think that'd be another interesting way because you have that dual ball handler with Beverly and Harden to start the game for the first 6 or 7 minutes, and then you have the dynamic scoring backcourt of Harden and Gordon to finish the first quarter, and then Beverly can come back in and Gordon could stay in to start the second quarter, and then Harden could come back in his usual spot midway second quarter, stuff like that. So I think that's another interesting way that rotation could play out. It's going to be really interesting to see how D'Antoni and the coaches deal with having Beverly back. But all it does is it's just a bonus to get Beverly back, both defensively and offensively as a ball handler. They've really missed Beverly as well.
Yeah. Finishing it up here with Eric Spyropoulos, writer for The Dream Shake. That's the Rockets affiliate on SB Nation. A couple of questions looking forward. First, Rockets' next two games going to get a lot harder. Wizards not exactly playing that well. They're 1-5. Rockets have a home-and-home coming up with the Spurs in San Antonio Wednesday to wrap up the road trip, then back at Toyota Center Saturday night. Obviously, the Spurs are a good team. I'm not going to say otherwise. They're excellent, best coach maybe in basketball history in Greg Popovich. But I don't know that they're the full-blown matchup nightmare that they've been in years past because of Pau Gasol at center. Now, the Spurs, offensively, they're going to give the Rockets nightmares. The way they move the ball, Kawhi Leonard, the Rockets are going to have a hard time stopping them. And you worry a little bit about Clint Capela and Nene. Can they rebound well enough? Certainly, Gortat was able to have his way a little bit down the stretch on the glass, especially against Nene. But I feel like where the Spurs have been an especially brutal matchup for the Rockets in the past, it's not just how well they move the ball offensively, but it's Tim Duncan's versatility on the defensive end. And so the Spurs, to start this year, with Aldridge and Gasol up front, they have not been an especially great defensive team. Rockets are a lot more agile up front. So while I'm not saying the Rockets should win either of those games, I'm just saying I think you can see a path where the Rockets offensively can have more success against the Spurs than they've had against the past. What do you think about how they match up?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting point, and probably some of the main concerns that people have had with the Spurs is the replacement of Duncan with Gasol. I think Harden can really exploit the Spurs' front court when he attacks the rim, both if he wants to finish or he can kick out. On the perimeter, the Spurs are still good defensively. Of course, they have Kawhi Leonard, who can, you know, try and will most likely limit James Harden. But I think Harden should do a really good job of trying to focus on exploiting the Spurs' front court by attacking the rim and then kicking it out. And yeah, as you said, you wouldn't expect the Rockets to win those games, but I believe the Spurs, heading into the Saturday game in Houston, will be coming on a back-to-back. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, we know Popovich loves to rest his guys on back-to-back. So
it's
early in the season, but you never know. He could pull Aldridge, he could pull Gasol, he could pull one of those guys. And Tony Parker has some injury concerns. So while I don't think the Rockets will win in San Antonio, I definitely see a path to them maybe to steal one in Houston on the second night of a back-to-back for the Spurs.
Yeah. Final question, and it's a bit of a softie, but I'll say for me at this point, 4-3, worst case 4-4 if you lose that game in San Antonio. If someone had told you that they'd be 4-4 after this 8-game start 2 weeks ago, would you have taken it? Because for me, I'd have taken it in a heartbeat. When you consider Beverly's injury, 7 of the first 8 on the road, I don't think the Rockets have played especially well, but I don't think I expected them to out of the chute, given the new parts, given the new system, given Beverly's injury. So if they can get out of this stretch at 4-4 coming back home, and obviously there are going to be a lot more games in Houston in the near future, given this 7 of 8 on the road to start the year, you would certainly like to see their play continue to improve, but from a record standpoint, to be 4-3 after 7 games heading into these two with San Antonio, I think you have to be fairly pleased all in all with how this this kind of 5-game road trip and this start to the season has started off.
Yeah, I agree. I'm pleasantly surprised at how well the Rockets have played in this road trip. The only game I have a real concern with was that loss to Atlanta, where it looks like the Rockets just essentially, they lost more to the Atlanta nightlife, I think, than they did to the Atlanta Hawks. They were very impressive against the Cavs, against the defending champions who are still undefeated. The Rockets gave them a real test. They went out the next night, blew out the Knicks in probably the best performance of the season. Then they had that stinker of a game in Atlanta. And then they come back and face a Wizards team, which, although it's not very good, they are 1-5, but they were desperate for a win on their home court, and the Rockets did close it out on the road, which is a nice thing to see early in the season. So 4-3 after the 7 games, presumably most likely 4-4 after the Spurs game. I would take that in a heartbeat. I only have one game so far where on this road trip where I was disappointed, and that was that game against Atlanta. So I would take 4-3 right now for the Rockets, just hoping that their play continues to improve and they buy in even more to the D'Antoni system throughout the season.
Yep. Eric, thank you so much for the time. Going to wrap up the show here. Why don't you toss out your Twitter handle as well as where people can find your work?
So my Twitter handle is at Eric Spiros, just a shortened version of my last name. As Ben mentioned, I'm a writer for the Dream Shake on SB Nation. I cover some games there and write some feature posts. And I also have my own NBA podcast. It's titled The 94 Feet Report, and it's on iTunes and Stitcher, and you can find everything on my Twitter page, at Eric Spiros.
Excellent. Eric, thank you so much for the time. I'll be talking with you again soon, okay?
All right, thanks, Ben. Thanks, Ben, for having me.
Sure thing. That's Eric Spiropoulos of the Dream Shake. Great guest, had him on before, knows his hoops, can find lots of his work on the SB Nation affiliate for the Rockets, does a lot of morning reads, does some great recaps, thought he had some really good insight about the Atlanta game the other night, which, as he said, that's really the only game on this road trip that you can feel bad about, because the Cleveland loss, they played the defending champs in their gym right down to the wire. Then you beat the Knicks by 20 in a game that you could have won by 30 if you'd played your starters. Beat a Wizards team tonight. The Wizards are 1-5, but they're certainly better than their talent. With John Wall playing, that's a decent roster. And especially to see the Rockets dig themselves out of an early hole, that's a good sign of a mature team. Ryan Anderson said after the game that he thought the Rockets outwilled them, which I thought was a fair assessment. Nothing against the Wizards, because, again, there's a lot of NBA-quality players. But to see the Rockets with their veterans buckle down and make plays late, that's a good sign. That's the kind of mature win that I don't think the Rockets would have had in a lot of cases a year ago, especially on the road. So on that, I'm going to leave off. Again, this is Locked On Rockets. Thank you so much for listening. You can follow the show at Locked On Rockets on Twitter, or you can subscribe to us on any number of platforms, iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere you consume your podcasts, just type in Locked On Rockets. You can find us. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network, which has tons of other daily content for every NBA and NFL team, including the Houston Texans. That's our sister podcast for the NFL, hosted by Robert Land. So I encourage you to check them out as well. Again, thank you so much for listening. I'm Ben Dubose. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. And I will be talking with you again in the coming days as the Rockets get ready for this home and home with the San Antonio Spurs. Have a good night.